Okay, we're going to go ahead and open the meeting. It's 6 o'clock for somebody's watch. So we'll come to...
I take care of that.
Okay, call to order. This time to ask the secretary to give a call roll.
Kit?
Yes.
John's not here. Malcolm?
Yes.
Eugene?
Yes.
Robin?
Here.
Jim?
Yes.
Harold?
Yes.
Gordy?
Well, I'm here, but I don't have my campus. I got to leave.
Jack?
At least 5 minutes.
Jack's here. Stephen, no. Ron, no. And Grace, no.
Okay. So we do have a quorum. First item on our agenda is the consent calendar. We have the minutes from the August 2nd, 2010, and August 9th, 2010. Is there anyone that have any question or corrections on any of those minutes?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Jim moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Gene moves to second. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Next item is the discussion on the September 13th public hearing. Now that we're done with that discussion, do we have anything else?
Well, yeah, I have to apologize because I got to leave, but we have friends here from Australia that are leaving Wednesday, and I got to go home and be a good host. I really come to talk to Grace about setting up a subcommittee meeting on their winter range, and she's not here. So we won't have much of a report, I'm sure. But we will be trying to meet in the next 2 weeks to just make sure that we do have something for the next meeting. But I couldn't remember who else had indicated that they wanted to be involved. You want to be in the winter range? Okay. Is there anybody else that wants to be on
Jack,
the subcommittee?
Jack was on that, wasn't he?
Your winter range?
Yeah.
So I'll get together with Grace and you guys, and we'll figure out a time maybe next week where we can meet.
I think you must have our emails, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or not,
yeah.
Okay,
so yeah, so you're going to be around next week. You're going to be around next week. Okay, well, we're going to have a whole great city, and we'll just set something up.
Sounds great.
So, all right. Okay. But I apologize.
We'll avoid the first week of October.
Okay, well, I'm thinking next week we'll do it.
Thanks for being here, Gordon.
Dear figure big.
Yeah. Did anybody have any comments, committee, from the committee in regards to our last public hearing? Any thoughts?
I guess. Not a lot of turnout.
No. We want to thank Renner Scott and Lyle Woodcock for their participation.
That'll be at the end when everybody winds up and pitching because nobody talked to them on that.
Yeah. I do think, though, at some point in time, I'm sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, you asked for a comment.
Yeah.
At the meeting, Gene asked a question about what could and couldn't be done, and I responded with that thing about, well, it's part legal and it's part political. And then yesterday, off of the internet, I got a reprint of an article from Susan Oregonian speaking about Measure 49 and the problems that we're discussing and acting here are statewide. It's not just our problems. So, you know, maybe we ought to be taking in recommendations that our elected leaders are politicians, and maybe down the road we could be suggesting that politically something should be done. Just in passing.
Okay, good thought. Any other comment? What I was going to say is I think probably we may want to consider at some point, maybe next spring or early spring, middle spring, another public hearing at some point in time. And we hope we will have some additional information that we can put out there that may generate some interest as far as citizens' comments and participation. Chad?
Make noise about our thinking.
Yeah.
And let the public tell us if we're right or wrong.
Yeah.
The announcement could say something like, do you want your taxes raised?
That would start.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
Now fill the house.
Okay, matters from committee members. We do have the subcommittees. Of course, we've heard as far as the Deer Winter Range, there's not going to be any discussion. My thought on the Road Standards Committee, and Don isn't here, is that we may want to go ahead and schedule. We've got the draft of recommendations that the committee put together. we haven't had the discussion yet, and I thought maybe if we could schedule that discussion for next our next meeting and make that the period of time in which to let our thoughts get out on the table on that those recommended changes, and maybe take an action as far as the committee is concerned. So I would look for us to be ready to discuss that at the October meeting and see about moving that forward to the commissioners as an action item. Is there anybody have a problem with that, or do I feel it'd be ready? So, and hopefully, Bob, you can be there along with Don. He's not here tonight. He won't be here tonight. So, how about
Errol?
Yeah, Gene?
Yeah. Was that about the counties getting together for an action? Remember, we discussed that a few times. The counties were going to look into that 22-29.
No, this discussion will be on the road standards.
Oh, on the road
standards. Yeah, on the road standards only. We haven't had any more.
Just limited to road standards.
Yeah, yeah, we need to move that. I mean, we've got the document, the folks did the work, and so we need to get that as far as Bob, you have some comments on that?
The only thing Bob I'd Hart. Like to add, Bob Hart, I was a member of that subcommittee, is that there's proposals from the committee, but we didn't include the comments because staff is proposing some changes as well to the flag lot things, and it's in your yellow pages, so you might want to review those as well to see how those kind of fit together. As some of those things, I think are warranted to see what we can do to make it better. So staff had some good suggestions as well.
Okay. Nora, do you think you could have somebody from engineers, that what's his name was here. About, I know that one time Chuck was here
Chuck
to talk about that.
And Robert, or
could you let them know so that maybe that they could both be here to talk about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we plan to attend okay. when that discussion comes up.
Yeah, if you'd let them know on that, that'd be great.
I do.
Super. Okay, and so anything else on the road standards? How about Deer Winter? No, you're not Deer Winter. That's right. We're Article 76. I'm going to do that one before we do the Trenor issue. But
Grace Silverberg sent me some interesting stuff on the Deer Winter Range. It was a one page that she had researched. But anyway, I think I'll wait till she's ready to give
okay.
that presentation.
Okay. Okay. Article 76.
Article
anything
76,
to report?
Jane and I had some meetings, and we've also met with various county and state and whatnot. And we started out with 10 or 12 issues and decided between the three of us that some of them just aren't going to fly. We're down to maybe, what, four or five or six that we're in agreement on. We just got to write
something up. Should we look at maybe November, December?
Well, we're scheduled for October.
Yeah, but I think let's move you out.
That's fine. That'd be
to
better,
maybe November.
Anyway, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So would that work for you?
Do you have a date in November yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
LDAT on the 8th.
It's the 8th. 8th.
Thanks. And October is...
For the 11th.
Okay. Okay. The other item as far as subcommittee report is the Turner Scott properties, and we had Jim Frick and Jack Swift work with Turner, and I know we heard quite a bit at the public hearing. So do we have some comments or recommendations from you, either one of you, on what action or issues we want to address or move forward?
Yeah. I undertook to kind of evaluate that situation in terms of legal reporting, sure, no doubt, and we had a couple of discussions. I don't see much going that way, at least.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions as to whether or not if the county, if you have a situation where we have a federal agency or saving the state lands issue, that the county really doesn't, may not have jurisdiction or authority to say, is there something that we need to have within our local ordinance to recognize that and give that authority or determination to the agency, so it seemed like that would be something that would take care of some of his issue. Is it?
Turner's problem is the poster child of the continually occurring difficulty that we have in and is probably the fundamental difficulty in planning. And that's these multiple tiers of jurisdiction and authority. And you've got DEQ, you've got, in Turner's case, BLM, you've got the county planning, all of these different areas of restraint, which the parliament suggests for simplification, somebody should be in charge, and all of these other guys should have to comply or coordinate with whoever's in charge. It'd be a major structural change, but that's what springs it here to try to be done.
But use an example, if you're in a situation where you have property that's along the river that has a lot of federal requirements or regulations that pretty much control that, and so the county, even though the property is privately owned, and the county may have a set of requirements or restrictions that may conflict with the feds, then should it not be that in that case, the authority would go to the feds? Because they basically can control a certain aspect of the...
Well, the situation could be handled very easily by an adjustment in the comprehensive plan that establishes a system of priorities. So, as you're suggesting here, where feds are involved with federal regulations, then everybody else should have to comply with what they're calling. And there should be an obligation of the various agencies to coordinate with each other so that it's not the applicant's problem to get DEQ, to get county roads, to get X, Y, and Z all in line. Applicant's problem should be to comply with one set and one organization.
So there should be maybe a section within our local land development ordinance that would recognize or identify that type, and maybe put together language then that would...
A precedence of jurisdiction, mm-hmm. if you would.
Yeah.
I think that, again, I call him the poster child. You couldn't imagine a more confused and impossible situation. And it's because of competing and overlapping multiple jurisdictions. And it's not the citizens' fault. It's the bureaucracies that have created the mess.
Well, would it be worthwhile for... I'm sorry, Bob?
I don't think Trenner's is an isolated case. I'd say, from my experience, just Paradise Ranch. We had competing governmental agencies that we had to deal with. ODFW wanted one thing done with the creeks. Division of State Land wanted something else done with the creeks. And NOAA Fisheries wanted something else done with the creeks. And it took almost an act of God and Moses' wisdom to try and figure out how to get through the maze and get all three jurisdictions happy with what was being done. And so this whole thing of you have one set of codes that you try and comply with, and then it says, oh, and by the way, you've got to go to this jurisdiction and get their blessing, and then you've got to go to this other jurisdiction and get their blessing. They're not always one and the same, and it just makes it real difficult. I think there needs to be a hierarchy and some kind of a bottom line so you don't keep getting whipsawed and with the time and expense of having to get all of these jurisdictions to come together with one kind of a final decision.
This is just another example of how crazy some of this stuff is, Bob, because in around 1982 or 3, I was hired by Paradise Ranch to relocate that whole creek. And I went through Fish and Wildlife, DSL, Soil Conservation Service, it was called at that time, and they said, you're probably the only person who's ever let move a steelhead creek, and we're only letting you do it because you couldn't possibly make it any worse. So what are they doing now? what are they doing? Are you relocating it again? Or what?
No. What we wanted to do at that time when we run into all the plaque was that there's some low bushes along the creek, you know, after that straight shot, down at the end where it starts to meander a little bit. We wanted to play across. Fish and Wildlife said, we don't want you to do that. We want you to plant tall growing trees.
Okay.
And we go, well, that's not the existing conditions. And how do you play golf? You're not going to carry the ball around the creek. You're going to play over. And then when we started looking at what kind of vegetation management we could do to try and mitigate that, then NOAA Fisheries got involved and everything else. And we started talking about what kind of in-stream improvements would be required. NOAA Fisheries had one idea because they had a different set of fish habitat experts as opposed to ODFW that had a different set. And
so let me ask you this. Who has the statutory authority for those, that stream, those streams? Who has
all of the above?
All of the above.
So where I'm trying to get to then, is it a state issue that they need to straighten out their coordination rather than the
county?
National.
It's a county issue.
No, it's federal.
And the problem is they don't talk. I can tell you that right now. I've heard it from other Fed and state agencies. They don't all talk. It's like the FBI, the CIA, and the local police. They don't talk. Everybody's doing their own. I see the process myself, and I'm watching where you guys are going. And, I'm hopeful for some things to get squared away and straightened out in the code because there are issues in there. I think in the interest of maximizing your time and your charge here, you guys are treading on things that we're not going to be able to, as the county, be able to. There's no way we're going to be able to get these guys to coordinate, no matter what type of ordinance you try to come up with in a comprehensive plan. So I think there's some things here, this is like the Army. The orders come from the top down. They're not coming up from the bottom. So we see those, and I just know for a fact that those are there. And there's probably nothing at the county level that we can do in terms of, we come up with a section, a code, an ordinance, what you want, but we're not going to be able to serve that to the Fed's doorstep and say, you better listen because we have this ordinance. So I think you guys, you got some good things here that you really can focus on. And in that issue, I just don't see how you're going to, at the county level, make the Fed's coordinate better or the state.
Well,
it's just something that we're a part of. We do our best, but they march to their own beat.
I think there are some federal regulations that do require some coordination. It depends on how it's prepared. And I think there are some issues that, again, it depends on the strength of the local jurisdiction and the congressional and Senate delegation as to whether they'll be willing to take it on. But I agree with you. The issue is at the top. I mean, if we were to walk into the office at the local level, they're gonna shine the county on in most cases. But I think there's a mechanism. It just depends on how much time and how much effort is the county going to be willing to put into some of these issues to either get them fixed or at least make an effort to do it. Jack?
Well, there is another new committee on coordination that the county has set up because the federal code is very emphatic that if the county is organized and chooses to implement it, there's an absolute requirement that they have to coordinate their plan with the established local plan. And that's in the U.S. code, both in the BLM Management Act and the Forest Service Management Act. And so something's being done.
Oh, we see them all the time. I mean, we get what's called land use compatibility statements. Whenever they're doing things, their rules allow what they're doing. They have to come through and coordinate and make sure it works with our local code. So that happens all the time. Anytime ODOT, Fish and Wildlife, they're doing their projects, but they still got to make sure that it works with the local ordinance. We see those all the time.
Well, I would say that don't write it off as a lost cause on this issue of the feds don't talk. If the county gets aggressive and if the county chooses to work on it, the county has a hammer. But as long as the county puts the hammer in the closet and walks around moaning, nothing's going
to
happen.
Well, I think the function of this committee is to identify the issue, and if there is a problem, is to make a recommendation of the board. Once we've made that recommendation, if we think there's an avenue or a process to take, then it's going to wind up being on the table of the Board of Commissioners to move forward and where we need to go.
Absolutely.
I think we're on the track of at least identifying that, and whether it ever gets all the way through there. I mean, our hope is that it would, but there are going to be a lot of hard hoops. I've been there, done that. So, okay, Jim, you had your hand.
Jim, I just wanted to say that I think in the 30 some years I've been working with the county. Back in the late 70s, it seemed like it was a less complicated process to come in and get a development permit, and that they had streamlined it a lot better at that point. This isn't Roger's fault. It's not any of the planner's fault. What happened was there were more rules, regulations, and litigation that came down the pike, and via that, we have made it a much more complicated scenario for the layman public to come in and go to planning and go to building and safety. Because I go into all these departments and I hear the builders frustrated, you know, when they're up at building and safety because of the process that they're having to go through and how many times they got to go back to which office to get what signed off. And I think that our committee, what I hope is going to come out of this after 2 years, is that we figured out a way to help streamline this back to make it more simple for the layman public to be able to come in, get the right answers from the right people, and then be able to develop their property without having to wait for 18 months.
Well, I think as far as on the Turner Scott issue and those that may fit within that category, Jack, if you could sort of look at drafting some language that might fit the local ordinance that would sort of define how the local governments would look at that, and we can sort of maybe pass that on to the legal counsel for him to take a look at it and give us some comments back. But it's a starting point, and I guess that's what I would hope that we can have maybe sometime toward December, January, whatever would work as far as an update to us at the committee. But that's something that we can, you and I could talk a little bit more about what my thought is on it, but
Dean Moses will get this done.
Yeah, that's right. We can do it. But it is a constant problem. It's not just in the planning side of it. It's in all areas where there's any kind of interfacing of the state, local, and federal agencies. That goes on constantly. So
I want to give the planning department a little bit of kudos behind all this stuff, because I've developed property starting in 1975, and somewhere maybe in the earlier mid-80s, I don't know if the commissioners had a talk with them or what, but they started getting much more cooperative, much less hostile, much more helpful, and I really have found it much more pleasant to work with the people down there for the last 20 years or 25 years than the way, especially in Portland, because it has gotten more complex. I don't want you guys to think that everybody thinks you've gotten horrible or anything.
It's not the staff. It's the standard of regulations that they're having to deal with, and it's not in my mind.
I haven't heard of
anything.
Yeah.
Well, I criticized the staff back in the 70s a lot.
Okay.
Hard to deal with. Like, they'd be shaking their head when he walked in.
Okay, we're getting out of hand here.
Okay, I was just going to say that as the population has expanded and as we've everything's gotten more complicated. I was telling Jim, you know, a real estate contract's gone from one page to 12 pages. And, you know, the planning department, when I built my barn as an owner builder, I thought they were very helpful. You know, you just have to go through the hoops, you know?
Okay, getting back on, I appreciate that. On the Turner Scott, is there any other discussion or comments anybody would want to make on that?
I still would like to re-emphasize one thing, that I still find it hard to believe that there was a zone change down there for the Bob Hamlin, OK Corral food concession of whatever it is, 20 acres of tourist commercial, And here's Fort Trenton down there who just was trying to do residential 2.5-acre sites, and they met all the litmus tests and everything, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's got multiple agencies all over the top of him and stuff. And, you know, I didn't see those multiple agencies all over the top of Hamlin when he went to get the restaurant in down there, were there?
Well, you have a difference in applications, too. You
only went through a couple of hearings.
You went through a couple of hearings.
But it was a rebuild. It wasn't a build.
It was an expansion.
It was zoned RR5 at the time.
He got zoned
to commercial. He went from RR5 to commercial. I mean, you don't see that. I'd love to do that. I got a lot of property in this county. I'd love to take some of my RR5 and turn it into commercial. But I can't do that. So, you know, I don't know. I just wanted that on the record, that it still is a little confusing to me how he was able to get that.
I'll talk to him.
He was there. Okay, anything else on Turner Scott's? Okay. Other matters from committee members. I would like to thank Annie for each got this report.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that was a tremendous effort on her part. What I would like to do is that I need to reaffirm the fact that we were willing to let her spend approximately $115 to get this ready for us. And the major part of the cost was doing the color copying of the maps. She did the rest of it as far as copies and that, but is there anyone on the committee that feels uncomfortable of us having to move forward, or her moving forward, spending the $106?
No.
And I think once we've had a chance to read through this, that we'll set up a time for some additional discussion on this issue on that spot. Okay, other matters? Any committee members have other matters they wanted to bring up? Yes, Grace.
I'm sorry I was late.
Okay, we'll go back to
Deer Winter Range.
And Gordon apologizes that he had to go home and be a host.
Okay, so nobody else had anything to say?
No.
I received from Steve Nula from the Fish and Wildlife a kind of a one-page summary of what they found, and I forwarded it to the rest of the committee. But basically, they did a study of they were able to collar 30 deer since 2005. And basically what they found is that some deer migrated and some didn't. So he is willing to give a presentation with, you know, a visual presentation and a more detailed report on our next meeting, which is October 11th. Okay, so the question I had is, the meeting last month, people said that they had to go hunting and we might have to reschedule it. So I wanted to confirm that he could come on that day, or if not, what day?
Who's going hunting on the 11th?
Well, I'll be there by the 11th.
Okay. Well, we've already said.
Are you going to bring some deer here?
The only issue.
I know exactly where the deer foot range is.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. What we have on that agenda is the discussion on the road standards that we have also on that agenda. Now, we could have two major issues to discuss if that works for you, and we've got 2 hours to work through those. So
I don't think you're going to get through the road in 2 hours, are you?
Oh, I think everybody's going to agree on that.
The roads could be pretty complex.
So how long a presentation is he talking about?
I don't know. I have no idea.
What we could do is tentatively put him on the front end of the agenda and say, give us half an hour of your time, if that's possible.
Maximum half hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then put the road standard issue in on the second part.
It's going to take more time.
It seems to me that given the discussion we had on Deer Winter Range, that might turn out to be a long
but
discussion.
I think the key is, though, at least we'll have the presentation part, and then if there's some questions, then we can always continue it through another meeting. So at least we'll get that presentation and the information that we want.
Say half an hour?
Half an hour, max. He should be able to give us some.
And if he needs any visual phase equipment like PowerPoint or...
Talk with Ang. We'll be doing it here.
Okay.
We may need to open up a little bit more. Can this open up? This has bigger
room.
We have
the right equipment.
Can I ask Grace a question? Greg, can you ask him how many other counties in the state of Oregon, at least on the west side of the Cascades, are under this restrictive of the Deer Winter Range? Because I think we're the only one. I mean, we're the only one with this much land that is affected by deer wintering.
Well, I think that it depends on what you mean by restrictive. Like in Jackson County, for very sensitive or extremely sensitive deer winter range,
yeah,
they won't allow division land divisions under, what, 120 acres?
160
acres.
Yeah, I know that.
So,
and there's limitations on location of structures. You've got to be within 300 feet of an existing driveway or roadway or other building.
Which
so
could be problematic.
You can't go to that part of the property. So there's a lot of different restrictions. Each jurisdiction did it differently.
So right. my understanding then is it's up to the local jurisdictions to create those standards.
Right. And say
that's
you have
the
a long flag and no other driveway to another house, and you have a long flag over 300 feet, you don't get it.
I think ours are from an experience standpoint, I think ours is pretty easy, to be honest. I've never seen somebody fail.
From Jackson County.
I've seen the ones of Jackson County, and you're right. If you're in the habitat, you're a minimum 160-acre parcel size. So it took a while to understand how ours work. I didn't quite understand how it worked at first, but I've never seen one fail. We have like a two-tiered test, and we'll sometimes ask the GIS department to you know, help us with maps, and they know the GIS one. They know the deer winterange by, oh, you mean the one where if you can't meet the first test, you just keep making a bigger and bigger and bigger circle until you meet it?
Not quite this.
But I've never seen them have problems. Okay.
Did you have a comment?
No, I mean, what, 13 years I've been doing planning commission, we've never had one rejected for it. We've had one that went to the BCC and they approved it, but just only one that even the planning commission didn't like, so it's not a big issue in my book.
Okay, so at least we'll be scheduled for the presentation for the 11th, the first part of our meeting. Okay. Other matters? We'll go back to that. Anything other matters that commissioner committee members may have?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm a board member for the Lower Applegate Citizen Advisory Committee, and they brought up a couple issues that I thought were interesting. Of course, one was the road standard. They were real concerned about that, but it sounds like we're going to be covering that. But another one was enforcement. You know, if, for instance, if someone is doing something you're not supposed to be doing, they think that they pretty much get a little slap on the hand and say don't do it anymore. And do we need to have better enforcement or stricter fines for people that are not doing what they're supposed to be doing so they don't keep on doing it?
Well, I think we probably could have Well, I think there's already things in place. It's just a question of staffing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a question of the how to do the follow-up. The county back in the years when I was involved, if somebody had a problem or a complaint, the person doing the complaining was identified, and the person that they were complaining against was given the name of the person they were complaining against, because the Board of Commissioners felt that everybody had a right to know who their accusers were. And it was specific that staff was required to identify if somebody came in. I don't know whether that's the same anymore or not. I think it's changed, and a lot of the staff got around that by a person might come in and identify a problem, and then the staff would then take it and go out and identify it. And so there was a ways to work around it. But there's just not been, I don't think, the energy level at the next level up, which would be the Board of Commissioners. And they're the ones that have to make a determination on whether the finances are there and legal counsel is willing to pursue or can pursue.
Well, in this day and age of technology, I mean, could someone be taking a video of it to show to the commissioners?
You have to follow a process, and I guess, you can do that, but it's going to be reported to NIE, the planning offices.
Mm-hmm.
If it's inside the planning purview or on the building and safety, it's on the building and safety side. I think you share, don't you still share the enforcement side?
Mm-hmm. Person.
And so there's one person that's dealing with the enforcement side of it.
So the public citizen can do that.
Grace had a question.
Bring it to your office.
I mean, you could do it. I would say if there was something that was that extreme, maybe that's something that they would want to take to the the board and ask for maybe more swifter motion. But our process is we take in a complaint, and then the code enforcement officer goes out to try to verify or contact the person complaining. I didn't see anything. Maybe you got a better vantage for the property. If there's something verified, then it starts a process of letter writing. So it does probably come across as a slap on the wrist, because usually people just ignore the letters, and it's probably about the third or the fourth time when there's a little sentence in there that also says, if you don't respond, this is being, you know, moved up to legal counsel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lawsuit potential. That's usually when people come running in, hey, I didn't get any letters. What's going on? But it is one person for the entire county, and she is just loaded with stuff. We have a hierarchy. Really, there's this many complaints, and really there's one person to do it, so they get prioritized. Okay, what's a definite health, life, safety issue? Those take precedent. The little ones where the guy next door, you know, selling something out of his garage or what have you, the things that aren't real high health, life, safety priority issues, they kind of get taken a backseat because we don't have the resources.
Gotcha. So the letter goes out, and then it says that someone has complained, and then you say you have to be in
the... You got 30 days to, you know, please contact this office so we can work on the situation. And then if nothing, then I think, you know, the process is they'll send out a second notice.
Right.
And then the third one, I think, is probably certified. And then, you know, they kind of escalate probably. I don't deal with it enough, but they escalate from just, you know, received a complaint to now, you know, it's been brought to the attention of county council and legal action may follow. Okay. That's usually when we get from them.
But the part that's missing out of that is it goes before the Board of Commissioners, and the Board of Commissioners then make a determination whether they're going to pursue it or not.
Okay.
The council won't move without the Board of Commissioners.
Yeah, she'll bring up a handful of cases that have been looked at and discussed and kind of prioritized in our office by the director and the building official. And then they're taken to the board, actually, and kind of where you want to go with these. The council will chime in on, you know, kind of some issues and that. And then they get assigned priority or just keep a dot on that property. And eventually, we eventually get everybody, because even though we may not act on these ones that aren't life-threatening or health,
right,
there's a mark that's placed on the property. When that person comes in, and it's usually the worst time, they're either trying to sell it or insurance or something, and all of a sudden they want something, and that's when that shows up. And that's usually how we get compliance in the majority of these non-life, is that they need something, so now, oh, I didn't know that was there, what do I need to do, because I have to get this signed off. And
So are there fees? I mean, are there...
There's a $500 surcharge.
Okay.
Fine, essentially.
Okay. Plus, $500
for
anything.
Well, it just depends on how far you got to take it.
Okay.
Okay.
Plus the building
that
fees are going.
Wait a minute. I got Jack's had his hand up.
About 3 months ago, I was at a Board of Commissioners meeting addressing exactly this issue. Some fellow had been cited and confronted with a $5 fine because he had placed a whatever too close to the property line. And the issue was he had to either move that thing and get it in compliance or pay the $500. And they would let him off the hook of the $500 if he would move it. So these things become real and lead to results.
Yeah. I'm just concerned with, like, commercial things are happening. Maybe gravel trucks traveling when they shouldn't be traveling, or you know, digging when they shouldn't be digging. Are they still just $500?
Well, you know, that could be other issues. You know, digging where you shouldn't be, I mean, you could be in, you know, another state agency area where, you know, that could be a severe thing, but nothing that we would. And that's the problem, too, is people will call us to try to enforce things that aren't under our authority, mm-hmm. just like that. There's guys out there in the creek digging, or... you know, things that we just don't have the authority to do anyways. Unfortunately, I don't know that a lot of these other agencies have the manpower or the ability, because, you know, I just tell you from experience that when you don't have the authority or anything, it always becomes a planning issue. You call planning.
Well,
I always say.
When
okay, I'm going to try and.
When a permit is issued, though, I mean, there are certain criteria.
Well, yeah, like gravel trucks. I mean, we get those all the time. When there's an aggregate operation, they're only supposed to be going down a certain road or a certain hour. We'll get complaints and, you know, we'll call the applicant and remind them of their conditions of approval. And we've had, so, you know, there are things that are hard that we deal with, but, you know, there's some things that are a state or a fed issue. And
well, I guess that was the issue. It's just kind of a reminder to them. It seems like you're just slapping them on the wrist and it's like, carry on and we'll give you another slap next time you violate.
That's like, what, yes, 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 and yes.
Yeah.
But again, it's a lot of it's because of the staffing issues. And, I mean, you're dealing with 7 days a week, and a lot of folks only work five, and a lot of things happen on the sixth and seventh day. So it's a multitude of issues. It isn't that the rules aren't there and that they're the assessment, fine assessments aren't there. It's just the ability to move it through the system. And it takes sometimes, it can take more than a year. Just on things, Bob?
On that, if it was something that was approved and the people aren't complying with the conditions, and I've seen it many times, the planning director has the authority to revoke the original approval and withdraw it, and then they're supposed to be out of business. And then if they're out of business, then it's something I know the commissioners have gotten involved in when something has been revoked and people try to continue to do that. So that's one thing. If there was an approval and they're violating those conditions, the first one to talk to is the planning director to see about revoking the permit.
Well, let's just say another scenario, though. Let's say the gravel has been taken, more or less, or most of it. So a revoke of it isn't any big deal for them if they've already got all the gravel that they need. You know what I mean? It's already been done, and they're keep on digging, and they're not supposed to. So to have their permit revoked, I don't think would be much of an deterrent.
But then it would be a gigantic issue of violating, you know, the approval. And I know when I was processing things, usually if something like that would happen the next time that organization comes in for a new permit, then they don't get it quite as easy, and there's a lot more follow up to assure that they don't get away with it again.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other issues, Jack?
Not another issue. I wondered if revoking the permit, $500 fines aren't adequate. What does the fellowship want in the way of enforcement?
I think they just wanted something a little bit more. Stronger to so that people won't be violating. You know, there's going to be such a huge fine that they're not going to want to violate, or they're not going to, you know, think about violating. Mm-hmm. Certainly, $500 doesn't seem to be enough.
The approach doesn't seem to work with marijuana growing.
Well,
I don't think the veteran is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just need to enforce it. From what I've been seeing in the last 10, 12 years, is without the enforcement, it means nothing. It doesn't matter what they do. So as long as the county's not paying for enforcement, it's not going to change.
Yeah, and that's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Other matters? Other issues? Okay, we have an individual here from the public that I think would like to provide some information to us as a committee of issues that he's faced as far as the planning process. I invited him to come tonight. I'd forgotten, should have invited him to the public hearing on Monday, but I called him too late to be able to do that, so I've invited him to come and give his comments and the issue that he faced, and we'll find out then. We'll take that information.
Sure.
And figure out what the issues are and how we may try to approach it from here. So introduce yourself and where you're from. And
my name is Art Malani. I know a few people here, Malcolm and both. And anyhow, my issue seems pretty small after listening to all this tonight, but it's
nothing
important to me. So in 2005, I bought 40 acres, which were in two parcels. Try to condense this as briefly as I can. And I thought possibly, you know, I did have two parcels. Now, this is on the east side of the freeway on Schoolhouse Creek Road. It's one of those properties that Reuben Honeycutt developed, and I know he was a good guy and a bad guy, and, you know, he kind of worked in the gray area, but he got a lot done, anyhow. So I didn't buy these from Reuben, but probably about a couple owners back, Reuben did develop them. So anyhow, I went down to planning to see if, in fact, I actually had two real parcels there. And that's why I paid for a history. At that time, they had about four pages is all they could find in the files. So I started, and they said, basically, we just think it's one parcel. So I started doing some research of my own, and finally I found a deed on each parcel. And it was done the day before the LCDC rules came in. So I thought, you know, well, I probably have something here.
Do you know the year?
It was 1973. It was, you know, the day before all the rules came in. So anyhow, I went to planning and talked to them about it, and they said, well, you know, that I thought I might have some, and we kind of went around, and finally Mike suggested that, you know, I go to the commissioners because I didn't want to pay all the money that they wanted because I felt like I already paid for a history, but I really didn't get one because it wasn't adequate. So anyhow, I went before the commissioners, and they were gracious enough to reduce the cost that I had to pay back to when I bought it back in 2005, so which reduced it pretty tremendously. So anyhow, Mike did a pretty great report here. It's pretty big. And he dug through everything, and he found that there were...
When you say Mike, you need to identify
Mike Snyder.
Snyder.
Okay. Yeah. And he said that there was a report back in, I think it was 1976, that the commissioners and some other people got together, and they kind of went over it, and they deemed that because the land was done, more than three parcels were done, that it was a subdivision, and since it wasn't somehow recorded with the state, that it wasn't legal. And so anyhow, it all came about because the lady who bought the second parcel tried to get a septic approval, and then this meeting came about back in 1976.
Yes. Let me answer or ask a specific question before you go too far.
Yes.
When you bought it, mm-hmm. did you not get a deed, and what did the deed say?
It showed it as two separate parcels.
Title search.
Yeah.
Did you do the titles?
Well, yeah, and it showed it as two separate parcels.
So in fact, got two deeds.
No, I got one deed. But there were two parcels. So then I looked,
identified.
Yeah, but then I looked back in the county records, and there was a recorded deed for both parcels.
Just for the record, when I was working for planning, it seemed to me that the title companies were quite frequently missed, whether parcels were part of a total or whether they were legal parcels. So just because it had a title report doesn't mean it was accurate. So.
But the public doesn't know that.
Right. Yeah.
It was like everything was simpler back then. You know, that became more complicated. But anyhow, so in my research, I found these and brought it to Mike, and he did this. But basically, he felt that what they had decided back in 1975 that he wasn't going to challenge. But so I did some more research, and unfortunately, there was like a lot of holes in the report. Back in 75, they said they didn't have the aerial to show that there were these roads going in there. And another big issue over the years since I've tried to show that really they should be two parcels. It's a 40 acre, and there's, so there's two 20s. Part of the issue is there's a tunnel. There's actually two tunnels that go under I-5 for Schoolhouse Creek. And they, in the report, they call them box culverts, but they're really not culverts for water. They're tunnels for, you know, the people that lived on the other side.
And part of the issue was, well, it's a traffic issue, you know, and we can't allow that. Now, since mine wasn't allowed back in 76, there's been more parcels developed on that side. They said there was no road going into mine, which I have the aerials back in 68 showing the road going into both parcels. Yet these other parcels that weren't even developed at the time now all have roads going into them, which didn't exist, you know, on these maps. And so that increased the traffic to the culverts. And then back, I don't know if it was in the late 70s, Red Mountain Golf Course was put in, which greatly increased the traffic, you know. So I just feel like that there's not really an equal playing field here, that all I'm asking for is that I have two parcels that each have a deed, that I may actually have two parcels when all the ones developed after that time were fives and tens. They all got septic approval, and most all of them have homes on them now. And I'm not saying that Mike or the guys in there now, you know, had anything to do with this, but I'm just saying that I don't think over the years it was done equally, and I think I'm being penalized for, first of all, prejudice to Reuben Honeycutt, you know, who I know you know what I'm talking about, Harold. I mean, he was quite the entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah.
And also that the rules are, you know, haphazardly thrown out. I mean, if the culvert is, or the underpass is really a problem, how come we can have a golf course with all these vehicles and other houses and septics that were put in? I just feel like, you know, this particular property was being singled out unfairly, and so that's my gripe. I don't know what good it does to talk about it.
The first questions I have is your timelines are jumping pretty drastically.
Sure.
Mike did your report. Have you presented an application? And if so, then what's the time frame the application was last presented?
You mean on this issue? Basically, after this report, Mike told me it was a done deal, and I talked to him.
What's the time frame of that report?
2008.
So in 08.
And then I talked to him about 2 or 3 months ago, and he says, I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's done. Based on what the other people found, you know, I'm going with that. But it isn't all factual. So I feel like, you know, without really going over that, and a number of the other properties that were in that illegal supposed subdivision, 12 properties, now have homes on them. And I think back in 95, Reuben kind of gave in and did a partition and got three properties out of about, I think it was 200 acres. And mine were part of those, but since he had sold those off before he got his partition, mine should not really be included in that subdivision deal. Or if they are included, then mine were, should have been done before the other ones were allowed. So I just, you know, I guess that's...
You know,
and I've got, like, you know, this report, and I've got the holes in the report, and I've got, in fact, there's copies of the deeds right in this report, and, you know,
well,
the recorded deeds.
Just going off what I'm hearing right now, it's mm-hmm. not, I'm not sure I'm going to word this right, but I'm going to say it anyway, just so we get out there
sure.
and talk about it. It's not a planning issue as much as it's a deed issue. There's a discrepancy mm-hmm. in your deed. And who would,
well,
maybe Bob or Roger could answer that. Who would be the people that would deal with that?
Well, the county did the deed. I mean, if...
But once it's recorded...
It shouldn't have been done when they do it. I mean...
Bob, I've worked in both offices of the assessors and the planning office, so I know how they kind of work, along with working with the clerk's office, is that... Up until just a few years ago, you just walked in and recorded a deed, and nobody checked it for anything. And that was before there was that disclaimer on it saying you want to check to make sure that land use things have been cleared
that disclaimer there. That wasn't on the old deeds back then. Because there was a lot of jurisdictions going back to the 76 stuff. That goes back to the old things with the state that if you created more than three lots in a calendar year, then you had to create what they call a PNI, public notice of intent, that you were creating a subdivision. It was mainly a disclosure. If you created more than four lots in one calendar year, then it wasn't in compliance with state laws, and then they said, well, then none of those lots count because it was done as more than four.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of things that have gone on, especially around Schoolhouse Road, because
right.
You look at the air photos, there's things on the ground. When the Department of Revenue came in 1973, they drew all of the tax lots for the county, and a lot of roads that they put on their maps weren't really roads. They were things that people used, but they weren't deeded easements. They weren't declared by a court of jurisdiction that they were public usage roads. They were just things that people used. And then it showed up on a county map that says public usage road. And then when you start reviewing them to make sure that a division occurs properly with, you know, required frontage, you find out there really isn't an official road, even though you look at it in your photo, you've got things there. But from what I understand of what this committee should do is look at the code and say, is there a way for you to get some satisfaction? And if Michael says, it's my decision as the planning director that you don't have a case, you know, you file the application, he turns you down, and then you appeal to the Board of County Commissioners because they're the ultimate authority for the county to say yes or no. So I don't know what this committee would do is, you know, is there anything in the code that allows you to go over Michael's head to somebody else because you don't think you were treated fairly? And it comes down to the bottom line, it's the Board of County Commissioners. So that would be...
And you know, we're not, in no way are we trying to throw you off, but
sure.
What we're trying to do is match it to what this committee's intended to do.
Right, and I don't even know if I'm in the right place.
No, but we're looking for talking to you, and that's always part of what we need to talk to
you. The issue is, are you coming up against some of the local ordinances that may or prevent you...
He's coming up on the deed issue.
Well, no, I understand, but part of that becomes part of the ordinance.
Because you could write the deed, and you could describe, you know, 12 different parcels, doesn't mean that they were legal for land use, that you could come in and get building permits off of them. And you turn around and sell it to somebody else, and you go, I've got a deed, and you go, yeah, you do. And did he own it when he sold it to you? Absolutely, he did. Reuben owned it before he sold it to the person that sold it to you. But once you had it, was that a legal lot to be able to issue development permits on through the planning process? And what it sounds like, the answer is no, because they weren't done legally. And that's
that subdivision of the four lots, the county's already deleted two. So which leaves me with two that I would think would be legal, because the other two are...
But the county did adopt, because the legislature created the ability for local jurisdictions to put together an ordinance to recognize legal lots or illegal lots. Or I can't remember the specific language. Roger probably may know that more than I do. It just happened about 2 years ago. So there is an ordinance that, because they were recognizing there were an awful lot of lots out there that had been developed and created and may not have met all of the particular criteria. Mm-hmm. The problem you run into, trying to remember the specific issue on this ordinance, and it's state law. What they did is just mirror what the state law has said, is that if you had to go through a public hearing process, i.e. a zoning commission, that there had to have been some process, and I don't remember the detail on it, but I think we could take a look at it and see. But
well, you know, another thing, at the very time that this was done and it's in here, there was a guy on the same road who had 20 acres who subdivided them, and some of the lots were as small as 2.5 acres, and that's in here, and they allowed it. So basically what they were saying is, two wrongs don't make a right.
even though we approved his, we can't approve yours. And that was
so I guess it comes back to whether it's a legal lot or not. There's
well, I think yes, if you really researched it, there's a lot of pretty nice houses on lots right now that probably aren't even legal lots.
Yeah, I got one right across the street from
it. Yeah, and I mean, I asked Mike if he would research these other lots that were done afterwards mm-hmm. that use the same tunnel and everything. He says it's too big. I can't do that. So,
Jim, I was just going to ask Roger. Do you see a lot of this where there have been little descriptions and created a deed, and that they're not really a legal lot of record? Because in my career, I've seen a lot of them. And it's one of the biggest red flags in our business on vacant land anyway, is that, you know, we're always telling the new agents, hey, make sure before you quote that for sale and it's developable, that you make sure it's a legal lot of record and check with the appropriate county planning. So, do you?
I would tell you not nearly the amount that I see in Jackson County. Is just... What happened here, and I don't know when it happened, but from a planner's point of view, it was great. When you look at the assessors or the deed records, they had the forethought to put acreage in it. That is huge, because in Jackson County, you'll see a deed card with mm-hmm. 15, 20, 30. You don't know what's going on, who got mm-hmm. it, but here, they have the acreage. And most of the time, we check a quick look at the deeds, and the acreage shows up as 8 acres in 1950 or 73, and today, 10, 11, 12 owners later, it's still 8 acres. That has changed the legal lot. So, honestly, I don't see it as a big problem here. I can tell you that it's a nightmare in Jackson County, so much so that when I interviewed for Josephine County, I asked the other planners, I said, so how is it going in doing legal lot determinations here? Well, since then they said, you mean like an authorized lot determination? I'm like, yeah, look at it. And I realized once I got here, it's not a big deal. But in Jackson County, I can tell you, every application that came in to Jackson mm-hmm. County, the first thing you have to do as a planner, because you're responsible for it, you're verifying if that's a legal lot first. I mean, there's times when 8-9 hours, you got colored pencils, we're drawing out the history of house, and you're asking yeah. other planners, what do you think it looks like from here? I can't tell. I know it's a huge problem, Jackson. I don't see it as bad here because the assessors document the acreage.
Bob?
Okay, one of the problems that I ran into, because in my other life, way before, I worked for the city of Los Angeles, and down there, you could come in and ask the jurisdiction for a determination that it was a legal lot and it could be recorded mm-hmm. that shows it's illegal. And the jurisdiction, if they found an illegal lot, they can record it and it's shown in the deeds that this was a violation. I tried to institute that here in the early 80s, and I didn't have any problems here locally. What the problem was, they said, there's only certain things that can be recorded, and so the clerk's offices from the state said, no, you cannot record that kind of a document to show that it's a legal lot or an illegal lot, so people would find it on deed records. And how we also did it is if you had a partition or a subdivision, you put right on it that the lots, as shown on this, are legal lots. And that was a recorded document. So those are things that would protect, you know, Jim. It would protect somebody like you to come in and ask for that authorization. And then it would stop these kinds of things from going all over. So if people think that's a big enough issue, then it's to try and sponsor legislation to change the recording authorization. It's not something that's a big issue that we can deal with here.
I mean, you would
Gene.
Say,
yeah. Gene?
Well, can the gentleman just plead his case to the commissioners? I mean, it seems to me, at this point, with all that's happened and everything, and I think you'd have a lot more left there and spend a lot less time and very little money.
Well, that's the other issue. Mike said, if you want to go ahead and pay another $3,000, you know, I can give you an answer, but I go, Mike, you've already given me an answer. He said, absolutely not.
So why would I give you that money to get the same answer? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, Malcolm.
I'm a little confused, Art. You say that somebody has done subdivisions since 1976?
Not subdivisions. There is one section of 40 that was broken down into, I believe it was 6 or 7 lots.
And what year was right? You know what year that was?
That they were broken down? I don't know. It was after 73.
But it was, I'm just wondering how they did that, because when did we get to a rule where you had to have a maintained county road to do a land split?
Well, there weren't even roads in there. And there are today.
I'm just confused, because as far as back as I can remember, you had to have Mesquite County Road to do that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things happened back then that you wonder how they happened, like getting a deed. I mean, I really don't know. And if you get a deed and that goes on and people buy it, and who's really responsible? You know, is it the county because they allowed it to go through? Or, you know, is it the fool that bought the land? I mean...
I'm going to go back to Gene's. I guess my thought is if you haven't approached the commissioners and requested a meeting to appeal whatever it is that Mike has told you, uh-huh. even though you haven't done something, I guess that would be the next avenue. Yeah. And I'm not sure that there's anything in the rules that will cover some of that, but that's going to have to be a commissioner mm-hmm. issue as to whether or not they're willing to take some action to either override the planning director and direct him to do something or sustain what he's done.
Right.
But I think that would be your next approach, is to call, ask for a meeting of the commissioners, and Mike would be there.
Sure.
And I guess that's would be my suggestion, is to, if you haven't had that meeting.
Have not.
Then I think that's something you should do.
That was it.
Well,
I didn't think about going any farther.
Yeah. What sure seems, if I could just add to why I thought this, is that you seem to have an awful lot of evidence that I think leans towards you getting your way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I were a commissioner, I sure would say, hey, it sounds like you just kind of got...
Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, though, he's not made a formal application process, so that's sort of the cloudy issue, but he's gotten a decision in some form or another from the planning director, so I would assume the next step would be for him to sit down with the commissioners. And they're either going to say, yeah, you need to move forward, or no, you don't need to go do an application, and then we'll hear the process. But
I think it's legal.
Yeah. Jack?
Well, what I heard, and there could be explanations for it, sounded to me like his basic beef was the same rules for these parcels over here, as where you got different results, and that is what the law looks upon as being arbitrary and capricious. And it's going to... If that's in fact the case, no. If there's something that distinguishes these two from these two, well, then that's out the window.
Yeah. But, we don't have those facts to answer.
Yeah,
that
we don't have those facts.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think his best avenue is to go approach and make a request to meet with the commission.
Which probably will, they'll probably say, well, you have to apply for a land partition.
And don't ever assume anything.
Okay.
We're talking to you, trying to at least steer you in a direction,
right,
you know,
right.
on a positive thing.
Right.
And I'm gonna throw something in, you know, because I don't want it to get forgotten. Is and no offense, because this isn't against you at
sure.
all. But county spends a lot of man hours and a lot of time when they have to do these. So that's why I don't want it to get forgotten that there's a reason the costs are involved, because. I mean,
well, they're not research. They're not enough to cover the cost anyhow.
Oh no, the county loses money every time they do it. They're not self-supportive. They lose money just doing the process. So I just don't want to make sure that doesn't get lost either. Is that there's a lot of time invested in that, just doing what Mike did for that thing.
Well, I can tell you, Michael, I was around when that happened, and Michael spent hours and hours putting that together.
Yeah, I know.
Michael looked at the original one, so Michael was familiar with it. So Michael had a second look, so to speak. And, you know, I can tell you, if any of you guys are familiar with Michael takes a very thorough, methodical look at things, and mm-hmm. that's why that came about. So I've seen code enforcement violations. When it's all said and done, he's pieced together a huge exhibit telling the story. So that was Michael's second look, and you're right. You know, we put these hours in, and you know, there's things that, and I think right, his next step would be an application. And just because we say no, it doesn't look like it's going to fly or it's not approvable, anybody can still submit an application. You've got a pretty good idea that we're saying it's not going to meet the rules. But, we can't at face value deny an application, even if we know it's not going to go.
What's he supposed to be applying for a lot split?
That's what it would be.
His contention is already split.
So that's right.
My contention is already split. Why should I pay for a partition?
Well, if you make an application for a lot split, it seems like you're admitting that you don't want to do a lot on that level.
Exactly. And I can appreciate the hours put in because I can tell you at least a third of these pages are pages that I submitted to Mike that I did the research on because supposedly there was no deed.
So anyway, make a request to the board. I think
sure.
Set up okay. A meeting with them.
For the purview of this committee, I don't think that's a real issue that happens anymore. His issue happened back in the 70s.
Well, there could still be some of those out there.
Well, I'm sure they're still out there, but it's nothing that hasn't been changed already.
Yeah.
Hasn't
yeah.
come to the top yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're all
out
there.
You would assume that, with all these, that there should be some kind of amnesty because the county did give deeds.
Grandfather.
And, there should be a grandfather.
Right now in 83, I think.
Well, but this... Oh, this is back in 73, right before, the LCDC came in. So if there were things that people didn't understand or whatever, I guess that could have been done at a county level where they didn't issue a deed or they immediately said these are no good, not until after it passed through a number of hands. And then
nobody would know until somebody went looking for it.
Yeah, were you an illegal immigrant at the time you bought this?
Yes.
You got a maid then.
You're okay.
You should have bought it. What you want.
Okay. Well, I think. Oh, did you have a question, Bob? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else have a question on this issue? Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Any other members of the public that has any comments or questions? Bob?
Separate issue. Variances. When you read the specifics of the code, it has to alleviate a hardship that's inherent in the land itself. It doesn't make any provision for things that make sense or for any other reason. It's got to be a physical limitation. City of Grants Pass has a different set of standards. It's, are you trying to implement the overall goals of the code? And so I think the issue of variances need to be looked at. It's not covered in ORS 197 or 215. So, and I know there's a body of law about variances, but a lot of it can be local issues. And as an example that I recall, is there's a place that a guy had 10 acres. The adjoining property to the north was about 4 acres, but they built across the property line. And so to try and fix the problem, the guy deeded them like 4 feet, and it reduced his property to 9.8 acres.
Oops.
So in a 5-acre zone. It wasn't his fault that, the guy to the north built over the line, and to try and solve the problem, they did a property line adjustment to relieve the encroachment. They came in and filed for an application for a division and asked for a variance, and the county granted the variance. But it was appealed by people in the area saying that the way the code is written, there was not a physical inherent part of the property that caused it to have a variance, like it was a cliff or a road separation or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so when it was appealed and finally went to LUPA, it was overturned. And they said, too bad,
right.
You lose. So I think variances need to be re-looked at. And there's another portion, and I don't know that it's specifically in the road standard, but what I've seen is when the original codes in Josephine County were adopted is if a road went through your property, minimum lot size didn't count. You could divide the property based on the road. When the county went through the acknowledgement process, they said, well, that only applies if it's residential land. If it's resource land, it doesn't apply because you can manage on both sides of the road. So it specifically eliminated that variance process. There's a piece of property that I was working with some people on. It was 62 acres. The road goes right through the corner of it. It's 3 acres that's isolated. It's got a little downslope on it, and it's not really manageable. You know, you could file for probably a non-farm dwelling and make the case that it's not farmable for, you know, commercial purposes. But because the standard says if it's resource land, you cannot waive the minimum lot size because the road goes through it, I think we ought to revisit that. And I know all of the code revisions are going to have to go through state review of it to see if there's any issues. But I think people could make a case that there are times when if a road goes through a piece of property, that you should be able to split it because of the unmanageableness of that piece of property and the isolation of that. So I think those are two issues, variances and being split by a road. It's code issues that we need to revisit.
Is that road thing a statute? Because I know that used to come up in Jackson County, and oh yeah, no, that's changed years ago. So I've always thought that was a state statute for the resource and road splitting.
No, it's not a state statute for the road splitting. It, in ORS 92, says if it's resource land, if a road goes through it, it does not automatically split it. You would have to go back through the process to show why it should be split. Because there was a lot of jurisdictions that just said if a road went through it, it's automatically split. Mm-hmm. And so the statute in ORS 92010, definitions of division of land, it says it's not an automatic split. They're still considered as one parcel unless they are separated by another process. So if there is an ability to make that case, I think you ought to be able to look at it. And one last thing before I shut up and let things go on is, I know ODFW is charged by the state as being the official agency that determines class one or two streams. And I've seen a whole lot of things on the official maps that are class one and two streams that you go out there and look at and say, that's absolutely crazy. One that I was working with that it shows as a class two stream, you have to have the setbacks and all that. And when you go out there and look at it, it's an irrigation ditch. It's only, you know, running part time of the year. There's no fish going up, but Fish and Wildlife said, well, that has an immediate impact on downstream things. So I think that there should be some reason to revisit some of those streams and say, are they really class one and two streams that either do have fish in them or they have an immediate impact? There's a lot of seasonal things that ODFW has on the maps that people are stuck with.
Okay.
I'd like to interject on that. I have a stream going
through. You need to identify yourself.
Oh, Arthur Milani. I have a stream going through my 41 acres on Walker Mountain. It's the last privately owned piece. And I had the Fish and Wildlife come out, and they looked it over and said, there's absolutely no fish up here. It, you know, begins at 2,000 feet and goes up to about 2,800. There's no way. And then when I went down to planning, it was on the map as a fish stream. It's like, what the heck? How could that be? I mean, they'd be dead by the time they got to the base of my property. You know, it's a little narrow creek, and it's rocky.
It's bigger at the bottom,
so, Roger, who would have put that on the map?
Is eventually Joe, which is eventually broken.
Part of them working with ODFW to get their goal five resources squared away. So in order to change that, you'd you'd have to amend that goal five map, resource map. And it's the same thing in Jackson County. Those things come up on, you know, where there's things shown and no, it's a this or that, but you go through your goal five resources and you adopt it.
How could it be a better process? Because it looks like it may have been created on a very simple process, i.e. somebody slips it in and then boom, it's approved and it's done. But yet then when it all of a sudden shows up, then there's a lengthy process to get it fixed.
Yeah.
And I guess how maybe that's something that the local ordinance needs to look at to allow for the same kind of a process that created it to get it fixed. I mean, when we talk to legal counsel, it always says you always have to go with the same process that created it. Well, if it was created by a state agency, just submitting it to the county and it was put in and then it passed, then that's one thing. Versus a full-blown process going through planning commission.
Off the top of my head, because there's other issues like that with maps, for instance.
You didn't have to bring that one up.
I had an idea to why do we have to be date specific? Why can't we just put the current, approved FEMA map for this region or wildlife? LUBA and LCDC, no way. Actually, Jackson County got hit on doing something like that. You have to adopt a specific map. So there's rules about.
But they don't define the process. They don't define. They don't try to determine what your process is. So if the county was to determine a process that would allow the same, I'll use the word fast track. That's not the right word.
Yeah.
To give the landowner the same opportunity to get it fixed as the agency had to put it in.
Yeah. Then you're talking like some kind of amendment to the map and
based upon
it's going to have its own process to amend maps. But I wish there was a way that we could, like the FEMA keeps coming up. I hope I never have to go through that again. But we couldn't just put a simple statement in there that, we use the most current, valid, whatever, effective FEMA map. No. It's got to be date specific. Mm-hmm. So next time they come out with a new one, under the rules and regs, because ours says December 3rd, 2009, we need to readopt that whatever effective map date. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how simple we can make it, but I'm with you on that.
Bob?
From the other side of why they are specific, we got into the whole thing with Ogden because of soils that were adopted in the Josephine County Soil Survey showed one thing, and then a few years later, Jackson County adopted a different soil survey, and the state soil scientist said, we're not going to use the Josephine County ones anymore, so now you've got to use the Jackson County designations, and we'd already adopted a set, and we'd never gone through a process to readopt it. And then a few years later, they find out that the original soils that Josephine County had were sufficiently different than the Jackson County soils that they were still their own soils again. So if you just say, whatever's the current thing, you don't have the ability to see where the changes are and give people the opportunity to say, something's not right here. Because if you just defer to another agency, things just change and people don't get notified, and that's how a lot of things get put into place that people don't know about. And so I wouldn't be in favor of trying to just say, whatever the current thing is fine. It may be administratively easy to do, but it's not efficient to be able to look at things that may have changed that didn't have the intended consequence that really applies.
Well, the soil won't change.
That's true. Jack?
Yeah, well, half of that is whoever's issuing the map has a history, so there's no problem to document what was FEMA's map in 1986, what was FEMA's map in 1992. It's going to be a matter of...
Numbers, any code?
Okay. Anything else? Any other matters from the public?
Sure.
Okay, you're public. Yeah. Okay, need to identify.
Okay. So I had Mr. Hart on the talk show a week or so ago to talk about these very issues. So I did what I could to tell people about the hearing. I guess nobody listens to my show.
Either that or you're satisfied with me. They didn't just decide they didn't come to our meeting.
Well, I mean, people called in.
Did
so
they?
There was definitely
somebody was listening.
As dry a subject as it is, I think we got a pretty good response from people. Mm. But
is this your wife?
No, my wife doesn't listen to the show.
Oh.
you'll find that just doing that in the planning commission, we did open houses on septic. We had one that was televised open to the public on septic systems. We had one on water. You know, it just gives them information and they're satisfied to actually get some information most of the time. They don't have to be very specific to their piece of property. They just want to understand things. And sometimes they just can't understand it. Like septics is huge because everybody's coming in. Well, you can't do a septic. You can do a septic in 95% of the world right now because there's a system designed for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what kind of system will be determined by DEQ and the septic test? But it's pretty rare you can't put a septic somewhere unless you don't have room to put it.
Right.
So if you can get that information out and just have people have an understanding of it.
Well, I found
that a huge difference.
Not a whole lot of people go to these, but the people that do show up provide a wealth of information. And every time I've come to these, I've had a lot to write about. That'll certainly be the case tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock when I'm cranking away after a full pot of coffee.
Yeah. you'll find that people are there. And a lot of the PC stuff is, oh, I saw you on TV. You know, I don't even have local TV. I don't get to watch it. But, you know, it's people that I'd never expect. So, oh, yeah, I was watching that. You know, and they listen. They pay attention.
Okay, any other comments or issues? The only other one that I would just throw out on the table that somewhere along the line we'll probably want to talk about, and that is the pre-application process. That does have impacts. Every county has a little different way to look at how pre-applications are done, and I just think for our purposes that, again, it's one of those issues that is it a requirement of state law, and if it is, are we following what the state law says? If it's not a requirement, are we being more restrictive or less restrictive than what we should be on how the process moves for the benefit of the citizenry? Scott?
I also wanted to inquire about, I know Malcolm had brought up at the very beginning about secondary dwellings, inquiries to that's coming up because I think that's a pretty fascinating issue.
But we don't have that one scheduled, but that certainly that is another issue, I think.
That was 83 when the last ones were allowed. So I have two. Mm-hmm. I have two little lots on one piece of property. But mine was built in 73, so it's grandfathered in. But anything after 83, it's the hardship only, supposedly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Mr. Hart had
something. Well, I remember Jackson County is if you have double the size of the zone, say you have 10 acres in a 5-acre zone, they approve a second residence, you didn't have to split. But here, you can't have a second dwelling on a property unless you split it. So different jurisdictions look at it differently, and I don't know if that's an issue to look at. And the other thing on the pre-app, so I know Jackson County, if you have a type 3 or type 4 issue, then you have to do a pre-app, but they're optional if it's a type 1 or a type 2. Where in Josephine County, just about everything, you have to have a pre-application review. Unless it's an over-the-counter permitted use, like a dwelling in an R5 zone. But everything else has to have a pre-app, whether it's small, medium, or large, you get to do one. And that's not required or mandated by state law.
Okay, Gene?
Yeah, Gene Downing. I was curious about that. Are you talking about like mother-in-law homes? Or are you talking about I want to make some money home? I want to sell a piece of property. What are you talking about as far as the second?
The second one is a rental. You know, if you have a...
So that's to make money. In other words, it's not like a mother-in-law home or something where you really are bringing your mother-in-law.
I think Josephine County has done probably the best job of any that I've seen for the health condition, taking care of mom or sick kids or even a friend if you have a letter from a doctor. You know, Josephine County does the best job they can to make that happen for you, and I think they do a very good job on that. But I think there's the question of the second dwelling, if it was for making money, then it's completely different. Like here, you cannot have a second one. Even if you had 5 times the minimum lot size, if you had a 20-acre parcel in a 5-acre zone, if you just wanted to do rentals, you can't do it here. You've got to split the property to do that. But in Jackson County, if you have a larger piece of property than what the zoning allows, they'll issue a permit for an additional property so you can make money as a rental. You can't sell it off unless you do the division, but you can sure rent it.
But doing it that way, isn't that not cutting taxes out of the county?
Not necessarily.
Well, couldn't they be reassessed for the building?
Because you can assessor can assess whatever zone, 1 acre for a dwelling, per dwelling even, say, so two dwellings would be 2 acres, they can assess the rest under farm or forest, or all residential. So,
Mom, can I answer that?
I'll take that, because I worked in the assessor's office and was the data analyst for them. A piece of property is assessed based on its market potential, not exactly what you have on the property. So if you have a piece of property that can be split, it's going to be assessed at a higher rate than a piece of property that can't be split. It won't be as high as if it's already split, but it can be assessed based on its potential, because that's what the market is going to be based on, is what's the potential of that piece of property. If you can split it, it's going to be worth more, it's going to bring a higher price, and you're going to assess it higher, just like you get assessed at a higher rate if you have a view property as if you're down on the flat land. So the assessments aren't necessarily going to be killed if you do that. They're just going to be a bit different. It's going to be harder for the assessor to try and look at that and say, you know, does it have a potential for two lots or not? But that's a function of math. If it's a 5-acre zone, you got 10 acres, so you can put a second house on it. You can raise the assessment, and if you don't feel you can, that's why you have the Board of Property Tax Appeals to go in and say they assessed me too high because I can't put that house on. It goes back and forth. So there is some relief on both sides to figure out how you get values.
But if a house is already built, say it's allowed, and you build a second house, even though you haven't split it, but it does have the potential, won't the assessor's office assess it at the value, the existing value, which means two houses have a higher value than one house?
Absolutely.
So, in essence, the county tax system is not losing.
No, it's not losing, because there's a provision, because of the way the tax laws work, that if you are doing maintenance to your house or do a small addition, $10,000 or less, then they do not change your base rate. But if you go over that threshold, then that's called an exception process, and they will add the full value of what you added to the roll. So there is a way to capture those larger projects. If you did a major addition to your house or added a second house, that would be an exception, and they would do it based on today's value. So you may have an old house that was built, well, say today, and you pass the code and it says, okay, we're going to allow a second house, and they built that in 5 years, and it's the same basic house, but if it was added to the roll in 2015, it would probably be at a higher rate because that's what the going rate was when it was constructed.
Ron?
Back to the original, before we get on the tax thing, it was the pre-application. Question for Roger or Grace can chime in too. To what effect does the pre-app have to make the process run better versus hinder the process?
Well, I can tell you from just a planner standpoint, once I get the application, it's a lot faster because I've already seen everything, I know everything, and really it's just getting to the meats and the bones of it. So it just definitely gives us a look of current stuff because, you know, somebody was doing 4 or 5 years ago, different rules and regs, so the pre-app definitely makes it a lot cleaner and faster on our end. You know, I'm not for it either way.
for or against. You know, on the other hand, you know, if we don't do pre-apps for everything, it's less work for me, which is a good thing. But on the other hand, you know, that's going to stack on the application time, because then I'm going to take some of that time that I had in pre-app, and I'm going to use the majority of that 150 days, because I'm going to be looking at everything for the first time, going through, and then making a decision. So, you know, there's pros and cons to it, I guess.
But potentially you could be running into the 150-day wall a lot more than you would now.
You know, that always comes up here and there. That's a, you know, something
that you Well, I think that depends on the type of applications. I think, I think what Bob was saying is there are the more slam-dunk types that come in that really don't need to put a whole lot of time into the pre-app time.
Well, that's why they have a timing director's decision.
Yeah.
And you have the state statute that says if you file an application, first 30 days, they can use it to check to see if it's complete. And if it's not complete, you just say, here, here's the things to go fix. And that's the state statute. So what they've done is to codify that and say, okay, we're going to run you through a complete separate process of a pre-application, and then when it comes in, we're going to check it again to make sure it's still complete, so you still got that 30 days before the 150 starts. So to me, on something other than like a comp plan zone change or something complex, it's running a double process. I think you're going to get out a little bit faster if you run through one process rather than two. It may seem, oh yeah, it's a little bit more complex taking the application through without a pre-app. But that's what the 30 days is about, to say, here, we found this problem, and if you want to keep going, you know, we'll process it the way you have submitted. The other thing is, in some jurisdictions, a pre-application is an option. So if you don't know if that's going to be a problem or not, you have the option as a property owner or applicant to file for that pre-app, go through it. It's not a mandated process.
So again, I bring it up and I just identified it. It's something that if the committee wants to look at it and we think there's something that we want to review and make a recommendation, that's going to be, it'll be on the agenda somewhere in the next 2 years.
Certainly
so.
Something that might not be, there might be a value to look at.
Some parts of it. And I would agree, more complex ones, your type 3, type 4s, where there is a lot more detail, it doesn't make sense to get it on a pre-app, and most of those folks appreciate that and are willing to take and spend the time. It's the ones that probably don't need a whole lot of scrutiny. They just need to understand what application they got to fill out and get in and
that's
get it out.
What really have to be weighed is what type of application
would
you weigh that
in. Director. Anything else? We still have another 25 minutes if you want to stay till 8 o'clock.
No.
Time to go. Meeting's adjourned. Meeting's adjourned. We'll see you on October 11th.
That's the answer. There are a lot.
Yeah.